You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This gardening feature is brought to you by Harry Humans Garden Center.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Humans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Humans Garden Center.
It's 10:30 and time for the Garden Zone with David Parker from Budding Inspirations. And we are chatting with Jeremy Finn from Harry Humans Garden Center, our sponsor. Good morning, David, and good morning, Jeremy.
Morning.
Welcome back.
Morning. How's everybody doing?
Morning. I like that.
Good, Jeremy, good?
Yes.
Nice to see you. Been a month.
Yeah.
So anything that annoys me about the show, not in a rude way, is I realize how fast time goes. Because it's
time
like,
flies.
It's
just, all of a sudden, it's back
again. I saw you yesterday,
again.
And now we're here again. And I'm like, damn, man. Okay. So, Jeremy, on our discussion, we were talking about lawns last time. But,
yes.
You know, that can sort of evolve into what we're going to chat about today. And we were just having a private conversation, and we feel that we're sort of going downhill now. In the weather-wise,
that downhill to winter.
Yeah, I love winter though. So for me, it's uphill.
Yeah.
To winter, so that I can be cool because this physique needs a bit of coolness. You know? No, but so basically, we were just talking about now starts getting the time where you start looking at the bigger things in the garden, the pruning aspects, trimming up dead bushes, blah blah blah. So we thought we'd just talk about tools and maintenance of them and what to use, etc. Is that correct?
Yeah, I thought we'd do a little bit of getting ready for pruning story, and I'm relying on you for that. the face. And then I thought we would go on to just some, you know, it's a very good time for planting as well.
100%.
And I thought we could just chat about some go-to plants.
100%.
So, for our areas.
And that's on you, Jeremy, just so you know. No, you own the nursery, Jeremy. No, but I was just going to say, that does tie into a little bit of the conversation of the lawns, because it wasn't just lawns, but where we were talking about irrigation as well. And I was saying to you that I sometimes push clients that I know are very green in their heart, don't want to use water, and do want to plant up to sort of another month from now when we start planting, so that we allow the natural weather to sort of hopefully stabilize the garden and help all the plants root.
Yes.
So yeah, definitely good call. So we can discuss that.
Yeah. So in terms of tools for pruning, so a pair of secateurs.
Yeah, 100% pair of secateurs, a pair of hand cutters, which I think is what you call secateurs.
Yeah.
A pair of shears. A lopper, which is obviously a little bit of a brute force tool. A saw. And obviously a ladder would be very important.
Yes.
And I always sometimes look at my tools in my trailer, and besides the mower, and that it's a very small amount. I mean, obviously I have two shears and two for my staff, but you can get away with very minimal tools in the garden to keep your garden looking good. And then it's obviously about just keeping those tools in good check. You also want to make sure that you understand, you know, I sometimes see my guys using a hand cutter to cut a plant thicker than my thumb. And that's not what you want to do.
Definitely not.
You know, you pretty much just deadhead and take out very thin straw-like branches and that are a bit dead in roses or any bushes, lemon trees, whatever, with your hand cutters.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, you can go up the scale. Shears generally are used for more hedges than that, Jeremy. I mean,
talking about hedge shears now.
Yeah, hedge shears. I used to always buy the extendable handle ones, but I just find they don't work. They just break on the joins and that. It's nobody's fault. It's just they get used well, you know, and then you start trying to use them for something a bit thicker, and then, obviously, we force them, and then they don't work so well. So that's why I mentioned a ladder. Rather get up to the area with your shears and do that. And, obviously, I'm going to be very rude if it's past your natural point of being able to do it, then you're going to call somebody in to help you anyway, you know?
Yeah. And I just wanted to talk about those shears. There's some of the shears actually have like a little notch at the bottom of the base.
Yeah.
And that you can use as like
slightly
a
thicker stuff.
Yeah, so, sort of like a lopper. Because that's the other thing. People sometimes get confused by what they're actually using the tool for. So when it's a hedge shear, it's definitely shaping.
Yes.
It's not getting into the dead wood and the thicker stuff.
No, 100%.
That's where you're going to use that lopper or the saw.
100%, 100%. Look, so something that I try and encourage with my team is we try and keep a hedge. So you'll notice when you cut a hedge, Jimmy, the problem is if you come back once a month, for example, the hedge has grown by like 5 centimeters, and then the guys end up cutting it on the outside again. And then you come back, and then eventually the hedge is sort of lopsided and it's grown into the path. So I'm always trying to encourage my staff that you've got to – every now and then you should be pushing it back to old marks all the time so that you keep it as that hedge. It's a very important point. It's like everything, if you just leave it for a month or two, then you see beautiful growth and you think, oh, well, now I can't cut that off. So you just do a light trim.
Yes.
And eventually it just overtakes the area. So very important to, again, go back and figure out what you're looking for. You mentioned earlier that we might talk about plants, but that's the point. What am I wanting for this area? What plant do I want to use? Is it the right plant for a hedge? Blah, blah, blah. You know, and then that's obviously, you can come down to Harry Gimmons and get some good advice on that.
Yes.
And then use that.
What about power tools? Those power hedge trimmers.
Yeah, I have a hedge trimmer. I have a three-bladed hedge trimmer. Obviously, it's got a middle static blade, and then the other two on the outside work. I mean, it's a wonderful tool. It really is. But for a home garden person, it's a bit heavy.
Yeah.
Very expensive. I mean,
is it battery or petrol?
No. I'm purely petrol driven.
Uh-huh.
That's why I panic when I see the petrol prices keep going.
yeah.
So the whole business is petrol based. I just think it's important so that Jeremy can go to work during the day and we don't have to rely on your electricity to do your home. You know, we can come in, get a key for the gate, for example, and we just carry on. And that's something I do love about my job, to be honest. We can do that. But so I just remember these guys work with them all day, every day. So a hedge trimmer just is a bit too heavy for a client. You do get electric hedge trimmers. Which are a lot lighter.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a baby chainsaw that I absolutely love, Jeremy. It's a single-handed chainsaw. So, but this is actually for the guys that do a lot of tree felling, and they're right at the top of the trees.
Uh-huh.
And remember, they're harnessed in because they're 20 meters above the ground, and they're doing sort of canopy pruning in that. It just gives them ability to hold on with one hand, I suppose, and then just reach out and just cut these smaller ones away. But again, I think unless you're really confident in your ability and you tree pruning your own trees with a chainsaw, I think that's always left to the professionals, because remember, they're going to have to dump it as well, or mulch it, I suppose.
Yes.
I'm a fan of mulching, but I must be honest, I hired a big mulcher once, and it actually took a lot of effort to mulch. Like, I just thought you just like shove the branch in and it goes, and then it's there. You know, it's like when you go down to the dumps here, I mean, these things are, industrial size, so they're chipping, but you know, the crane just drops in and it does its job. But I found that it took a lot of effort, especially because we had a lot of leaf on the branches.
Yes.
Chippers aren't really designed for leaf. Remember, it gets stuck in there. So every 10 minutes we had to turn it off. So I found that didn't work so well for us.
Yeah.
But I think we're just talking a bit ahead of ourselves now. So yeah, anyway, let's come all the way back to the shears.
Get into the tools. Is there a place you could hire all these tools or not really?
No, you wouldn't be able to hire anything like the smaller tools in that. You know, the higher shops are going to set up for the bigger stuff so they can make some money. They're not going to
get a ladder.
No, ladders, you can get extension leads.
But garden tools.
Actually, get a brush cutter. I think you can get a mower, a chainsaw. But again, those are the bigger tools, Sue. And those are exactly that. Those are the tools that I need to own as a garden service or a garden landscaper. And as Sue being her home gardener, you wouldn't own those tools. But, you know, you've got a very capable husband who I know well, Mike, and he would probably be able to hire those tools and do it himself, Sue. So you're quite lucky, but a lot of people don't have that flexibility. Yes. So I do like the hiring places. I must say, I hired a compressor once to clean, and it's incredible, you know, these machines. If you know what you're using. Sometimes when we had a lot of rain and that we had all that rain, we had to hire submersible pumps.
Dewatering pumps.
Yeah. You know, the ones like the councils, you just start in very, very cool tools. Though. But yeah, so then you would talk about a lopper. And again, you stock all of these, Jeremy, so it's always good to go and have a look and get some good. I mean, I even noticed you had some shears that have like quite ergonomically handled.
Oh, those are the Kudu ones, the Lasher Kudu ones,
To be held quite nicely. So, and I think what happens is we found the shears that we absolutely love, and that's the only one that I buy now, to be honest, because they last, they're hardy. But it's taken a few years to go through a few tools, I'm not going to lie. And then obviously we got a lopper. I mean, Jeremy, you get the. You mentioned the size in the shears with that little hole that you can cut something bigger. So you get your basic Lasher garden lopper.
Uh-huh.
Very nice tool, very hard tool, very, very easily usable tool. But then you get the bigger ones that have the spring action, Jeremy.
That like ratchet.
Yeah, the ratchet sort of lopper. It's obvious that with that a lopper compared to the lasher lopper, you can cut a bit more and a bit thicker. But again, you find you just got to make sure, because it just goes past that point and then you need a saw.
Definitely.
So it's important to have the bow saw as well. And you actually get quite big saws. You get 600 mil. I think a bow saw is 300 mil. And then you get the 600 mil double bow saw saws, which are quite big, which can take a tree down. Mm. Remember, it's quite funny. We have a tool called a blower, which my staff drives me crazy. I'll get off the bucket and my guy will grab the blower. I'm like, we haven't even done the job yet. Why are we using the blower? You know, but it's not the point. The point is they, I had one break on me the other day, and it almost is like they don't know what to do anymore. Like the blower's gone. It's like, well, grab a broom.
You know, sweeping.
Like 10 years ago, there were no blowers. So tools are very basic things, you know, and very easable. But remember, the other aspect that I think we need to mention when it comes to tools is that everything needs to be maintained.
Definitely.
We, unfortunately, as South Africans, we know what lack of maintenance on any equipment does to our country. So it's the same as a business or same as your own tools. You need to make sure that you look after your tools. Something that people don't know is you can carry diseases around. So for me, it's very important. My clients know that we know that. And we don't, if you know you've pruned a rose using your secateurs or your hand cutters that some laymen know about, then if I've cut aphids or black spots in that, it's very important that you actually wash that tool off or jays fluid it or disinfect the tool, so that the next garden you go to and you're pruning their roses, you don't transfer disease from one garden to the other. I mean, that's the last thing that you're in the job to do. You're there to make the gardens look lovely.
Yeah, and then and also not, just the moisture as well after between.
100%.
We've got, you know, at the coast here, so anything that's not like beautiful stainless steel is going to start rusting as well. 100%. So oil and dry.
Q20 and dry it off. Mm. Even a little bit of sandpaper every now and then. Because remember, not only it's the every plant has a very gentle sap. I mean, some have more than others.
Yeah.
But especially when you start using your bow saw on bigger trees, you'll see that the saws will
gunk
come up. And then the saw's actually in good condition, but you try and get through a branch and it's like, whoa, something's not right here. And it's just that you just haven't maintained your tools properly.
Yes.
So we actually have wire brushes in my toolboxes and we just wire brush at the end of every job we do. We just take a wire brush and clean it off like a bri grid cleaner, you know. You just clean on the metal and sort that out. And then, as you say, dry, because you don't want any rust on your tools. And then, I think that's the basic. Same as a ladder. Remember, ladder has moving parts. So everything needs to be oil checked, maintained. Just don't spray Q20 on your rims when you're about to stand on it, because then you'll slip off the ladders and you'll phone me and blame me, and we don't want that. So,
yeah, and then it depends on what you're pruning as well. Sometimes you're going to need to use one of those tree seals or pruning seals. That's always a good thing. We've got that one that's like that pinkish color and then the one that's the blackish color.
But
that has an antifungal property and also prevents the water moisture from getting in there.
100%.
Sometimes you make a big cut and then moisture gets in there, depending on which way the cut's facing, then you're going to have problems.
100%.
So definitely
so
a good
really,
idea.
Really, really good valid point, Jeremy. When you prune, you always try and prune a branch. So if you watch people that sell cut flowers for a living, they don't cut the stems flat. They actually cut the stems at an angle, 45-degree angle. So when they go in the vase, the actual bases aren't flat on the vase. Then they won't absorb the water. Because remember, cut flower absorbs it through the stem.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same principle. You cut at an angle to allow water off. I had some frangipanis in Constantia that have not looked good for 2 years. And I came to you the other day, remember, and you gave me that beautiful tree seal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an amazing product. And we've used it. It's got very hard. So it's almost like a cement, tree cement as well, that fills up with the fungal properties. And we managed to sort of paste up the hole that was literally facing directly up, which means it's caught all the water over the seasons. We first cleaned it out, let it dry out a little bit, made sure there's no rot in there, filled it up, put an angle. And I must tell you that frangipani now has leaves on it. And it's amazing what a little bit of – I think sometimes – and I always take responsibility for things, but the brush cutter or the weed eater, Jeremy, every sort of house you see with a wonderful garden guy has those electric, you know, and they work. They all work. But if the guy's not skilled enough, Jeremy, and he's going around your tree stem, for example, at the base, cutting grass, he can actually ring bark the tree naturally. He basically cuts a hole in the bark with the nylon. And then you start thinking yourself, why is that tree not doing so well? And why is it dying? And blah, blah, blah. And then it's all because it's just hasn't been cared for. So funny enough, the reason I mentioned that is I think my guys were at fault for doing that on these frangipanis. So we basically created beds around them at the base. But we also took that hessian. It's a biodegradable hessian. And we basically wrapped the base of the stems, hopefully. And obviously put a bit of that tree seal because it does rejoin the bark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually worked wonders. I mean, it's made a big difference. And I always recommend clients. But you know what? It just also looks ugly if you've got these white things. Now, a lot of clients try and put like a white pipe around their trees, for example, when they're babies. It works. It works. But I just think the visual is not some. My head is always going towards aesthetic value and making something look good, you know?
Yeah, you can definitely use those tree rings. We get those cement tree rings.
Yeah.
And then you can put the mulch
in. But those are nicer, Jeremy. They're just definitely. Plastic ring, thing, you know?
Yeah, there's also that edging, that garden edging that. Well, the one that we stock is the Gardena one, that corrugated green stuff. That's so weird for me. It's either 15 centimeters high or 20 centimeters high by 9 meters. And I'm like, where did the 9 meters come from? Because someone comes and asks me like...
I just need a meter, please.
No, but that's just weird for me because, like, I mean, we use 10, you know, 1 meter, 10 meters just doesn't make... Where did the 9 meters come from? What made them make it in 9 meters? Was it because it fits nicely in the little roll or what is it?
So, could be.
But the weird thing is, like, every single other supplier that does it, because they all copy Gardena, whoever made it first... 9 meters. I'm
like, you think somebody would have said like 1.5, 2 meters?
Yeah, exactly.
We are busy with the Garden Zen with David Parker from Budding Inspirations.
Hello. that's us, Jeremy.
All right. So, yes. Back to it.
Jeez, that felt like a long way down, TZ. Okay, cool. So, yeah, we were talking about the tools and that. I mean, I guess that's where the tools sort of end. It's just a basic care. Come down to Hergumen, you've got a wonderful selection. I mean, obviously a rake and a broom, we never added that in.
Yeah, I was going to just talk about cleanup.
Yeah, everyone needs a rake and a broom.
You did mention the thing that I wanted to chat about was mulching those or putting at least – getting it into a compost heap if you're 100%. Not doing huge things. If you're doing huge stuff, then you're going to need someone to come and take it away.
100%.
Which is another story. But, I agree with you on those chippers.
Yeah.
You do get the little home domestic ones, but it's probably more...
More effort.
More effort, yeah. But what you can do is you can put it into a compost heap and eventually stuff's going to break down. There is that other... Yeah. I'm trying to remember what they call it, Hugo culture or something like that. I can't remember what it is, but where you actually put logs in the bottom of your like raised beds and then you put soil in and then you plant your plants in. And it's a style of growing plants where the logs break down over time and then they also hold moisture, but then also eventually break down and produce and, you know, a mix for the thing. So you can use... your clippings and stuff like that. But otherwise, you're going to have to get someone in to come and take it away to the dump.
Now, look, I mean, it's such a catchy because it's funny. So grass, which seems like the most obvious thing to use, Jeremy, can actually contain the disease and that can actually cause your compost to be unsatisfactory and have weeds in it and cause disease and fungal disease. So you've got to investigate it a little bit, Jeremy. I in all the years that I've been doing this, I've sort of leaned towards rather coming to you and buying compost.
Yes.
I know I'm getting good compost and I know that I'm getting right compost.
Mm-hmm.
I think people's mindset always, people want to do it for the sake of being a little bit organic, and I understand and appreciate that. But I'm going to say this now, and this is just a very direct personal view of mine, and it's got nothing to do. But I do the recycling that the guys can pick up today, and I feel that as much as I'm a gardener, that's what I can do to help the environment, because in all fairness to the government, it's a good service, it's free service.
Yeah.
And if you're putting absolutely everything that is recycled, everything, and I mean, I even rinse out, like you use like a, like, you know, you get the like potato bags and metal trays. I'll even rinse those out and put it in there.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why I'm telling this, Jeremy, if we got that right, and then all my organic stuff, like my peels and my tomatoes and whatever, and was in a black bag, and the council took that and actually put it into a ground.
Yeah.
And they knew that that was the only stuff going to ground. Believe it or not, that ground after 5 years would be the best plantable ground in the country. And then we could actually get something going government-wise that could be a place where everybody could come and get stuff. I don't know. It's just, you know, in my personal opinion, the reason why I mention that is everyone's got a good heart and everyone wants to compost, but compost takes a hell of a lot of effort to get right, you know, yeah. Jeremy. And when we're doing it at such a small scale in a household, you know, even 5-6 people is small scale, to be honest, Jeremy, because you go to these yards that they make compost in, and you're talking 30 tons of soil is on top of each other, and that middle of that pile is way up there in degrees, and that's what you need in order for compost to break down properly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why in the forest and that it takes years and years. But remember, what happens in the forest is the layering, and you've just kind of mentioned it in your log the way you lay out your logs in that. That's what's happened in the forest. The logs will fall, break off the branch in the wind. Nobody touches it for 10 years. That eventually comes, the leaves layer, the insects come in and do their natural thing. So,
all the fungus as well.
100%. And then when you talk to people about compost bins, they're sort of like, oh, well, no, we don't want to see it, so we're going to put it in the far corner down there under the trees. And you're like, but that's your first problem, is it doesn't want shade. It wants full sun. I mean, if anything, it's got to be front and center in your garden. It's got to be like a feature.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to have somebody that turns it over, that looks after it, that puts a... I always tell the people to go buy a thick black plastic from the hardware and you cover it with that, because you want to absorb all the heat out of the sun to make sure that that compost breaks down. And look, the branches are good, but you won't, as a layman composter person, if I cut a branch and I put it in there, that branch is going to take years.
No, it'll definitely take longer.
In fact, not years. I mean, I'll tell you something. I've done so many jobs where I've got a client that said, look, we've had this compost bin for 10 years. Can you please throw the rubbish away? And we literally... The top layers are generally the leaves, so you kind of rake that out and you can use it. But the whole bottom layer is branches from 6 years ago that I cut the tree. They're still there.
Yeah, yeah.
I promise you, I've seen it. It takes so much effort, guys. And that's where a chipper is a good thing if you're really adamant about having a good compost pile. But as you said, Jeremy, these baby ones that you can get are just not usable, to be honest. You know, so it might be worth, if you're really into it, it might be worth doing your garden for a year, keeping a pile of branches, and then actually hiring. There's a couple of guys that work around the valley, forest grounders. They've got TMC services. I know Al very well. Yeah, they all have chippers, but like proper chippers.
Yeah, on a trailer.
You know, you probably could pay them to come in with their chipper, and they'd leave a guy there, so you could get away with a better fee because you don't have to hire all the staff to do the tree trimming, and just ask them what it would cost you to chip for an hour, and then literally chip over in 6 months, and then get that into a pile and get that working, you know.
Yeah.
But even that, Jeremy, can be used as a mulch rather than or compost. I think mulching for me is better than trying to have a compost, Jeremy. I have to be honest with you.
Yeah, especially if it's old wood, I would definitely say that chipping it and then using that as a mulch would probably pay you, because it depends on the size of your garden. You know, not everyone's going to have stuff that's going to be 100%. Able to produce. So, you know, 100%. Then just come to me and buy it in bags.
There we go. Even better. But even with the mulch, Jimmy, they say that you should leave your mulch to dry for about a month or two after it. It's not perfect, because you'd rather want to get it in. So you pray that if you're just covering a large area that it just works. Sometimes I use mulch to cover big areas for no aspect, but just to make the area look better for factories and companies. So then I'm not too fazed by it. But you know what, if you want to plant in that with it, you've got to be careful what mulch you're using, because it can also cause different reactions to the ground, use too much nitrogen to break down, and so on and so on. So
yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right. So then I think we're going to push you now, Jeremy. You've got 2 more minutes, although I think we should actually maybe carry it over to the next time. But we're going to talk about plants, and that you wanted to talk about plants.
Well, maybe we leave that and we go to that other little thing that I was going to chat about, which was verge gardening, because it'll help me to understand this, because I'm going to put you in the spot as well. Again.
I think I'm going to be absent in a month too. It's always me.
Well, you know, I like to learn about things, so this is good for me as well. I just wanted to chat about, you know, when someone has got a verge garden, often people don't put a lot of effort into it because it's on the verge. But then other people do put an effort, and then they cry when someone comes and rips it up because they're laying electricity cables or what are those other things, the fiber that went in. So, I mean, especially also people put irrigation and they want their verges because it's the outside of the house.
Yeah.
So what is your recommendation on making the verge look good so they don't have to spend a huge amount of money, but at least...
That's okay. It's just me being me. Carry on.
Yeah, just so you can make your verge look good, but then, not spend too much money. And then if things have to be dug up or whatever, then it's not too much of a train smash.
No, 100%, Jimmy. But again, look, Jimmy, that's quite a difficult question, because I think it's each to his own, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If I've got a beautiful verge, I've got a grass, only grass though.
Yeah.
And I think I can get moaned for it because we're trying to be, but I've got a wonderful well point.
Yes.
And I have the most amazing 2 pop-ups. I think I bought MP Rotor nozzles from you the other day. They just spray and they just work, and then I've put a hedge in. But remember, I'm quite lucky that in the jobs that I do, I get to... Like, I had a client over there throwing 6 beautiful gardenia shrubs away. But they were perfect. But he's revamping his area.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking them. And I'm like, no, I think I'm going to take them. And I put them up. And over about a year, they formed the most beautiful little hedge. So I'm sort of more... I don't really want to see the road and my neighbors, as much as I love all my neighbors, just so everyone knows. So that's my own personal thing. But, you know, a lot of the time people have a wall already.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got no water and you've got nothing, then I'm quite a fan of using a stone chip.
Yes.
And I'm actually getting, I like the modern look of grey stone. People always think this Worcester stone is quite expensive, Worcester stone. But I'm sort of a fan of doing like a grey stone.
Mm-hmm.
And then all you need is like, if depending on your verge, three aloes. And you literally systematically plant these three aloes in a neat manner.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take white stone and I border the aloes with white stone.
Okay.
And then you've just got this modern like grey dash of white, which really pops off the grey stone and an aloe or two.
Are you talking about the normal concrete stone?
Yeah.
19 mil?
Yeah, 19 mil. People don't underestimate it, hey, Jimmy.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Jimmy, it's literally that. I can take that 19 mil grey stone and I talk about white stones, which I get from you as well, which I absolutely love. Look, stone, everything's expensive. But then I saw this in Deep River the other day, and the guy's made like sort of crosses in a weird way through his verge, but it just looks stunning, and he's used different colour stone
yes.
to create different effects. And then he's like put a square cobble around one plant. He's got one verge plant.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is just a low maintenance, easy, put it in, create your effect. And from miles away you see it because it's like it just pops and it's got the shape to it. And so, but again, Jeremy, that's a tough question. I mean, I love my parents to pieces, but I'm literally there to say, whenever you get a succulent, so I've literally just over the years just been breaking a succulent and putting in it, now they've got this most beautiful little, literally next to me, around the corner here,
yeah.
this beautiful little verge of succulents, you know. Uh-huh. But there is, I remember the outcry when the fiber came into the valley. I mean, it was bad, Jeremy. I mean, they were leaving people's driveways, like, with dips and hollows, and so I guess you just never know.
Yeah, you've got to just be careful.
Yeah.
And I
suppose I'm sort of another guy who likes to have people around to my house, so I guess bricking it and making extra parking bays around your home so people can park their cars up and it might work. Remember, there's a general rule of thumb, Jeremy. I'm not privileged enough to own my own home yet. I still rent, but I think it's 1.1 to 1.5 meters of your verge is 100% council property. So
yeah.
No matter what you do or what you say, you're always going to be beholden to the council. And then the other flip side problem to that is that when you try and get the council to come and prune a big tree, they don't want to help anyway. So you've got to maintain and look after your verges, guys.
Yes.
Right.
Time is flown, and it's time for us to say goodbye and thank you for coming in.
So it happens when you're put on the spot all the time. Time is flown. Thank you, Jeremy.
It's a
pleasure. Wait for a month. We'll right under pressure.
We'll see both of you in 2 weeks'
in
time.
In 2 weeks' time.
There we go. Have a lick afternoon.
Have a lick
today. And happy gardening.
Happy gardening.
Thank you.
This gardening feature was brought to you by Harry Humans Garden Center.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Humans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Humans Garden Center.